From Bigfoot to ghosts, aliens to the afterlife, this is Nightcast. And now, here is your host, Ian Morris.
Good evening. Welcome to the night. Thanks for joining us this evening. Tonight, I ask the question, what would you do if something were after you in the middle of the night and you could not stop it and you could not kill it because it's already dead? Well, tonight we talk about zombies. And with us in studio this evening is a zombie expert, Stephanie J. from Los Angeles, California. Stephanie, good evening.
Good evening, Ian.
So, Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit about zombies and, well, where they come from, what they're all about?
Well, you know, the typical Hollywood zombie is this undead creature that feeds on human brains. That's not necessarily what real, you know, zombies would be. They're usually a product of a virus that attacks the human body, namely the brain. It kind of reproduces into a different organ, and that's where this whole undead creature comes from.
Stephanie, do they know what virus this is?
You know, they have narrowed it down to a virus, but from what I have read and studied on, there are several viruses that actually can kind of replicate the zombie effects on a human.
What are some of the zombie effects?
Well, there's slow movement. A lot of the bodily functions don't work anymore. The muscles in particular have, you know, moderate use. They're very slow. No speech. Zombies have a very keen sense of hearing still. So sounds do attract them. And they basically become very animalistic in that all they need to survive is pretty much food, and that's usually flesh.
Are they in fact dead, or are they living?
You know, this virus that attacks them, it basically shuts off all bodily function except for the brain. So, you know, by human standards, their heart's not beating, so they are dead.
Yes, it sounds like kind of a gray area.
Right.
They're kind of alive, but not really. They're probably more in the reptilian brain, so to speak,
right,
or the autonomic nervous system. Obviously, they have to breathe for muscle tissue to work.
Well, you know, there are some reports that this new organ that they developed, because the virus mutates in the brain and kind of becomes this new organ, and there are reports that new organ is independent from oxygen.
So it's independent, it's anaerobic?
Right. It doesn't necessarily need oxygen to survive. It can utilize it to recreate these cells, but it doesn't necessarily need it.
So it's an anaerobic virus. Well, then, is the organism that they inhabit, like being a person, is that person then essentially dead, or are they actually alive? Is there something, some type of life within the person, or does that virus take over and just completely,
you know,
use the dead body?
It pretty much takes over. The body is just kind of a shell. Of course, when this, it is a process. Once a human is infected, within like the first hour, it's usually just a kind of bruising around the wound. It's said that, you know, this virus is usually transferred through a bite or through a cut. So that area will become painful and discolored, much like a bruise. Within a few hours, maybe 5 hours, a fever will start to set in. You know, the chills, the vomiting, things like that. That fever will progress into a coma, with eventually the human dying, the heart stopping, no brain activity. And then usually within a day of that bite, the reanimation begins.
Can it be airborne?
You know, the studies that I've seen, if it gets to a point that the mass population is infected, it can become airborne.
Well, that would present a huge problem.
It certainly would.
And there are cases of this, correct?
There are definitely cases of thought to be, you know, zombie attacks and things like that. Nothing airborne yet, obviously. It hasn't become a mass virus, but yes, there are cases.
How many cases are there of this? I mean, are there documented cases, obviously. Are there thousands? Are there hundreds?
There's quite a few. In my research dating back to 60,000 BC all the way up until, you know, a couple years ago. So it definitely spans history.
So zombieism, I guess, if that's what you would call it, has been going on since early, early times.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's archaeological findings of skulls and hieroglyphs and things like that indicate that zombies, you know, existed, or there have been cases of zombie attacks.
What about currently? Are there still current cases that are occurring?
Well, definitely. I think if you remember a couple years ago, I believe it was in Miami, there was they thought it was a zombie case. They thought it was due to some kind of man-made drug, but there was a gentleman in the street eating the face of a homeless man.
He just attacked him?
He attacked him, and when the police came, they tasered him, they tried to shoot him, and all those defense mechanisms proved to be ineffective on him.
Because he was just on a basic, again, kind of autonomic nervous system level.
Right. Now, this person hadn't died or anything. They were thinking that was some kind of effect of some kind of drug, but they did do an autopsy after this gentleman passed away, and there was no drugs in his body.
No drugs in his body. He was alive, though, at the time. He was just expressing zombie-like behavior.
Right.
And did they find out why? Was it the virus?
You know, it wasn't the virus. Nobody's really sure what it was, but that is definitely documented as a zombie attack.
I wonder how many more of these cases there are worldwide that that really aren't reported.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine from the ones that are reported, it's incredible. I'm sure there's many more. I'm sure there's in the thousands and hundred thousands that haven't been reported.
Now, other than this virus, and it's an undisclosed virus, is that correct?
Right.
Okay, so this undisclosed virus, I wonder if it's pandemic or if it's just a regional virus, or has it really spread and maybe we don't know about it or we're not being told about it?
Well, as far as the cases that I've read, I mean, they're from all over the world. They're from Egypt, they're from Africa, they're from China. Here in the United States, it seems like some settlers experienced some kind of zombie attacks all across Northern Europe and Southern Europe. It's been everywhere.
Are there cases of early settlers in America?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's some cases, there's some even theories that that's what happened at Roanoke.
At Roanoke?
Yes.
Really? Really? And what have you heard anything, I mean, this is a question that I have, about the Donner Party that came across the, I believe, the Rocky Mountains?
Yeah,
or Donner Pass, is that?
Yeah, I have, actually. There was actually a reporting about how the early colonists would go on these hunting expeditions and search for food, and they found some parties killed, and what they found on these bodies were that at first they thought that they'd maybe been attacked by animals or the indigenous people or things like that, but then they started realizing that all their food was still there, which wouldn't be so in the case of, you know, an indigenous attack, or they would have taken the food and the resources. Everything was still there. It looked like they had kind of turned on each other as well. You know, there wasn't an animal attack because the meat was still on the bone. And then they started noticing that all these corpses had one thing in common, and that was either a bite or scratch marks on their body.
Would one of them contracted the virus?
It would seem so, yes.
And then spread it to the others. But where would that one originally get it? He couldn't have been bitten by a zombie out in the middle of nowhere.
That's true.
So where do you suppose he could have contacted that virus? Or is that virus just free-floating in the air? And
you know, it could be. There are some theories that it lies dormant within all of us. and that, you know, eventually, if it develops into a strong enough virus, it'll become apparent in all of us once we pass, which is even a scarier thought.
Well, that's incredible to think of, that there is zombie virus that is lying dormant in all of us. Now, I know that there are certain viruses that we carry that lie dormant in the lumbar spine, and sometimes they can be actuated by trauma or something on that order can cause the virus to suddenly become self-replicating. And perhaps that's what this zombie virus is. Maybe it something happens traumatically or some environmental change happens, and all of a sudden it starts to replicate and take over the brain, cause brain swelling, whatever, and turn an average person into zombie.
That's correct. I mean, I've heard of people that kind of parallel things like rabies to, you know, a zombie virus, the way it affects the human.
And we're going to get into that later, because there are, oh gosh, there's probably more, but there are about five diseases that are known to cause zombie-like behavior. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Approximately how many zombie cases have they reported? Is it in the millions, thousands, hundreds?
I would think that it's in at least the 100,000s. I've been trying to collect all of the cases and kind of write them down, make a little compilation of them so I could, you know, better study them. But, you know, you also have to incorporate what they call voodoo zombies, which are not a result of a virus, but of kind of black magic. So, you know, somebody dies and this a shaman or a voodoo expert or whatever you want to call them, a witch, a sorcerer, they perform a spell and kind of bring this person back from the dead.
So this is an entirely different source.
Right. And, you know, they do call those zombies, too. They call them voodoo zombies. So if you want to get into that category, that would probably bring your zombie count up to millions in terms of cases.
So there can be zombies from a virus, from a tangible cause, as well as zombies can be created through black magic.
Right.
And is that common in the Caribbean or Caribbean, however you would like to pronounce it?
That's where most of the cases come from. There's a couple actually also from Africa in history where they've made these zombie armies to fight because they can't die. You know, they're an undead army, which would seem very powerful, pretty scary to the opposer.
An army of zombies. Well, that's going to be very interesting. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the diseases that can cause zombie-like behavior, as well as an army of zombies and how you would stop them. We'll be back in just a few. I'm Ian Morris.
This is Nightcast.
Welcome back to Nightcast. I'm Ian Morris. In studio with us is zombie expert Stephanie Jay from Los Angeles, California. We're talking about zombies this evening, and we were talking about diseases that can cause zombie-like behavior. Stephanie, are you aware of any other diseases that could cause zombie-like behavior?
I know that there are a few. There's been a lot of studies on what can cause zombie-like behavior. Not necessarily create a zombie, but zombie-like behavior, yes.
Well, according to some of the research that I have done, one of those diseases is sleeping sickness. Now, that's found in Africa. It's also known as trypanosoma. And it can cause it because it's a bacteria that causes sleeping sickness. It leaves irreparable brain damage, and due to that damage, the person becomes completely dysfunctional, and most of what they have is just the nervous system. So that's one of them. Another one is rabies. And I believe you've heard of cases that rabies has mimicked zombieism, or how would you say that, Stephanie? Zombieism? Zombie behavior.
Right.
So rabies can also do that, because with rabies, you get brain swelling. And due to the pressure in the brain basically shuts down, and only the very minimal neurologic activity happens, and so the person can start acting erratically and become completely zombie-like. Dysarthria is another disease they say that causes it, and dysarthria is caused by trauma to the brain. So if you have, like, say, a concussion or something on that order, it can cause the brain to become dysfunctional, as well as there are also disease processes that can cause dysarthria, like Lou Gehrig's disease or Parkinson's. Those things can cause a complete loss of control for the person, and only the neurologic functions will function. Let's see, what else could cause that? Leprosy. Leprosy is interesting, and being that we are out on the islands, we'll talk about Molokai, where they sent the lepers in Hawaii. They kind of ostracized them and sent them over to the island of Molokai, where they basically treated them like they were the living dead. Kind of a key word or key phrase there, the living dead, because they had a shuffle, and they would walk with a shuffle, and they just looked very, very zombie-like. Along with that was the necrosis of the tissue. And what necrosis is it's just deterioration of the tissue, it's dying off of the tissue. So the fallacy with people who have leprosy is that, you know, body parts fall off, things. It's really not that way. They have necrosis of the tissue. So there's tissue that's peeling off, and very much like you see in the depictions of zombies. But so, Stephanie, can you tell us about any cases that you have researched about zombies?
Definitely. As far as studies, you know, there is a particular virus that they say mimics this these zombie attributes, and it's called solanum. And actually, in World War II, they were kind of trying to use this virus just to kind of kill people off. But there's actually reports that, you know, they would do experiments, and they would inject this virus into cadavers, but it didn't take as well because it was a stagnant bloodstream. So it is important to note that a living human has to be infected with it so that the bloodstream can carry this virus to the brain. That being said, you know, that's World War II. Going even farther back than that, there's cases in 329 BC with people like Alexander the Great, who was visiting some old army barracks. And among the artifacts that he found, there was vases and things like that with hieroglyphs on it. And these pictures they showed one man biting another, and that, you know, cut to the second scene, which was of somebody, the victim of the bite, laying on a deathbed. And then the next scene was the victim rising up again, kind of back to bite the other guy.
So back in ancient art or hieroglyphs, there are depictions of zombies.
Right. It would seem to be, you know, zombies.
That is really incredible.
Right. These are really famous explorers that, you know, have documented this. And whether people, you know, they didn't know what zombies were, but when you put all of these, their journals and things like that together, it's actually really amazing that they saw these back then. Marco Polo is another one. They got his journal, and there was writings from when he was in China in 1281. And he reported that that in one of his visits, one of the rulers had heads in jars. And I guess when he inquired, you know, what are these heads in jars, the ruler had told him that these were zombies that he had conquered. And, you know, of course, we've all heard that the only way to kill off a zombie is to kind of cut off the source, you know, cut the head off, shoot him in the brain, things like that. So he kept these as kind of trophies and relics in his palace or castle.
So he kept the heads of zombies.
Right, that he had defeated.
Well, that is really interesting. Now, this getting back to this virus from World War II, why were they injecting it?
You know, I
was it as a weapon? Were they trying to create, or were they trying to create a super soldier that was a zombie, or create like an army of zombies?
You know, to be honest, I haven't really heard what they were trying to do, but it's my speculation that they probably came across this virus in something. I mean, I don't think they made it, but I think that they found it somewhere, and they were, you know, maybe they came across zombies in World War II. I'm not sure, but however they found this, I think they were just trying to understand it, but, you know, and trying to inject it in cadaver, maybe bring back, you know, soldiers that they had. I'm not sure.
But if they were to bring them back, they would be zombie soldiers.
That's true.
So, in theory, what they could have been trying to do is to create a zombie army.
That's correct.
And that would be completely unstoppable, or even if the soldiers were, quote, killed, they wouldn't be killed because they are essentially dead anyway.
Right.
And they could just create more and more and more. The problem with that, though, is that if, in fact, say, for example, it's World War II, the American army creates these zombies, they go out and attack the German soldiers, for example, and bite them, then the Germans would...
Right, it would have become an epidemic, right?
Would become the German army of zombies, so we'd have zombie armies fighting each other,
right,
which would completely become a draw because both armies are, for the most part, dead.
Right. Well, I don't think they'd be fighting each other. They'd go for the living. They'd be on the same team at that point.
I understand. Yeah, that's right. Whoever is around who is living, be it the Allies or the Axis, they'd just become targets.
Right.
But, you know, actually, if that would have really taken off, that could have created a huge problem because it could have just spiraled out of control and there would have been massive zombies everywhere.
Right.
Wow, that's really incredible. Do you have any other cases that you could tell us about?
Yeah, actually moving, you know, throughout the world into the Central Pacific, another famous explorer or pirate, Francis Drake, actually, when he was exploring some unnamed islands, the locals had warned him of these cannibals that lived in the jungles, and he didn't believe them, so he continued exploring, and as his ship got closer, in his journal, he actually reported that that he saw natives kind of, as he approached the island, natives were coming, you know, towards the sea and kind of watching his ship come in. And then as he got closer, he realized that these were kind of slouching, corpse-looking bodies that were there. And he turned around real quick, and he dubbed that island the Isle of the Damned. So,
really? And is that island still out there today?
I'm not sure. I mean, I wouldn't even know where it was. It was an unnamed island at the time, so, but the locals seemed to know about it.
So it was an island full of zombies.
Basically, yeah.
But what happens on an island, for example, like that, when eventually you run out of living people? The zombies can't attack each other because there's nothing for them really to eat or to bite. I mean, they're...
Well, it was speculated that because the locals knew of this and they kind of considered them just cannibals, that they would send, you know, their prisoners and pretty much, you know, traitors, things like that. They would send them to that island as punishment.
Oh, so they would use it as a prison / final punishment.
Exactly.
For something that was obviously not acceptable within their society. They'd send them out to this zombie island and make them fend for themselves.
That's right.
Wow, that is really incredible. So now that was Sir Francis Drake, correct?
Right.
And this was in the Pacific.
Right, Central Pacific.
In the Central Pacific. I really would love to know if that island still exists today.
I don't know if you'd want to know if that island still exists today. It's actually a pretty scary thought, an island full of zombies.
An island full of zombies. Can you imagine that? Do you have any other case?
Yeah, definitely. Moving forward, as recent as 1992, actually, in California at Joshua Tree National Monument, there was some hikers, and they went hiking, and then they reported that they found an abandoned campsite. And at this abandoned campsite, there was a woman in her mid-20s that was found dead. And her cause of death seemed to be that she was hit in the head with a large rock. And then they noticed that her body was covered with human bite marks. So upon further investigation, they found that she was actually hiking a week earlier with her boyfriend. And the boyfriend was still missing, but the full autopsy of this female, her body's rate of decomposition didn't match that of her brain tissue. So it seemed that her brain tissue was still living.
So her brain tissue was still living, but she was not.
Right.
Very, very strange. Well, we are with zombie expert Stephanie Jay from Los Angeles, California, this evening on Nightcast. We're now going to take a break. I'll be back. I'm Ian Morris.
Sure to visit the website at radiob88.com. This is Nightcast.
Ian Morris, back with you. Welcome back to Nightcast. This evening we're talking about zombies, and we have zombie expert from Los Angeles, California, Stephanie J. Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit more about some cases of zombie attacks?
Of course. So this zombie attack takes us to Mexico, actually, and it was found in the journal of a priest. And I'll read you what he wrote. He actually wrote of, it says, "The natives tell of a sickness that darkens the soul, causing a thirst for blood of their brothers. They tell men, women, and children whose flesh have become gray with rot and possess an unholy smell. Once darkened, there is no method of healing." So we're assuming that he's referring to the zombie virus in that excerpt from his journal.
Very interesting how he ends that.
Right.
There's no healing. So, you know, once you've been bitten by a zombie, you become the zombie. There's no way out.
Right. And, you know, from these writings, I'm assuming that this wasn't just one incident. It seems that, you know, he was experiencing this kind of a constant basis, or at least more frequently than he would like.
Really strange. Any other cases?
Yeah, there's actually some in Africa as well. It came from a journal of some ancient colonizers, and they wrote, "On the shores of a great jungle where green hills hide their crowns, I dispatched an expedition inland. Our soothsayers warned us against this action. In their eyes, it was a cursed land. 30 or 50 men were sent. Only 7 returned. The survivors told tales of monsters from the jungles, men with fangs of snakes, claws of leopards, and eyes of burning hell. They feasted upon the sailors, their wails carried with the wind, and the soothsayers warned of the wounded survivors, claiming they would bring sorrow on all that they touched." So
they somehow became infected.
Right, and they feasted upon
their own
right.
shipmates.
Right.
Really interesting. Very interesting.
It is. You know, it probably didn't seem, or I'm sure it seemed like much at the time, but once you put them all together, it starts making a little bit more sense. It starts becoming a little bit more uniform in what all these people were experiencing.
Now, Stephanie, you're from Los Angeles, and I had read that, be this true or not, I had read that the Los Angeles City Fire Department, in their training manual, has a section, a small section, on how to deal with zombies.
I have heard that as well. I haven't been able to get my hands on a fireman's handbook, but I have heard that as well from various sources that there is, you know, there's in the handbook, there's, you know, ways to deal with certain outbreaks and things like that and epidemics. And I have heard that there is a small section on how to deal with a zombie outbreak.
So, I mean, a city entity of, well, what, the second largest city in the United States has a section on zombies. Therefore, it must exist. I mean, it has to exist. If it's in the manual, they obviously are worried about it. Now, I would probably guess that what they're worried about is more of the disease processes, like rabies. Of course, firefighters would have to know how to deal with a person with rabies because they are the paramedics.
Right.
But I really wonder if maybe there is a known virus, or maybe not a known virus, but they know of a virus that is out there that can create zombies.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, as part of that little section, I've also heard that it does, you know, instruct them to, when they attack, to attack in the head, things like that. So it seems like they know a little bit more than they're letting on.
So they're instructed to attack the head, because obviously the body makes no difference. It's neither here nor there. It's pretty much just a functioning shell.
Right.
Any other cases that you have done research on?
Of course, the last one I'll tell you about was actually from my hometown. So it's downtown Los Angeles, and this was in 1993. And it actually happened in a pretty populated area. It was at Venice Boardwalk. A lot of people know about that. And I guess there was some kind of a call made to the police about a kind of like a cannibal roaming the boardwalk. And when the police got there, the first thing they noticed was, you know, there's usually a lot of homeless people or performers on the Venice boardwalk, and there was none this day. So as the police continued to investigate, they saw wrecked cars and things like that. And they started seeing shadows, and out of this crowd came, they reported more than 40 zombies approaching from all directions. So apparently some shops, local shops, had set off their burglar alarms, and this is where I had heard that it says that they alerted local fire department. So I'm not sure what they, you know, what they know, but they did alert the local fire department, and they tried to arrest these people, these zombies, and nothing was, the tasers weren't working, the guns weren't working, and it was actually an anonymous detective that reported this story, but there were a few fatalities. Nobody really knows what happened. There was only one anonymous detective that reported it.
Now, it sounds like they kind of kept that quiet.
It definitely does.
Probably not to induce panic.
Right.
Really.
Right. You know, it seems like they definitely swept it under the rug. It says that the entire case file was hidden and taken out, so.
Wow, I would like to get a hold of the manual, the fire department manual for the city of Los Angeles, and look and see what it says about zombies in there. And it's interesting that in this particular case that you researched, that the police department called on the fire department.
Right.
So it seems like the kind of correlates.
Right. It seems like the fire department knows, you know, they're the go-to as far as zombies. You can't even call the police department because they're not sure what to do.
Now, do you have any description of what do zombies look like?
Well, you know, they, for the most part, in the beginning stages, they're going to look like a human. Just a little bit sicker. You know, when you see somebody with a fever or something like that, they just look a little pale, kind of sweaty, things like that. So initially that's what they're going to look like. Of course, they're going to have an initial bite mark.
And this is the part where they're still alive, isn't it?
Not necessarily, just kind of in the beginning stages because, you know, as I said before, once there's a bite or they're infected with this virus, it takes a day pretty much for them to become a zombie.
So when people are bitten, it's around a 24-hour process as they slowly die off and the virus takes over?
Right.
Does the person actually die off or are they still living?
Within that first day, they are living.
So they're still living after 24 hours. Do they die rapidly or is it a very slow process that they just kind of fade out?
It's pretty much a slow process. Like I said, that virus becomes a fever, and that fever just, you know, like a normal fever does, it kind of attacks, you know, your joints, your just different various functions of the body. So once that coma, once that fever sets into a coma, you know, then your heart stops, and then the human reanimates. So that's a 24-hour process. So initially, that person, when they reanimate, is just going to look like a sickly human. Now,
so their heart stops.
Right.
Does it restart?
No, it does not.
It does not restart. Then my question would be, in these zombies, how can the muscle tissue work? Because muscle needs two things. It needs oxygen and it needs glucose. And with no circulation, how is that muscle tissue going to get oxygen?
You know, as far as I know, the reason that it needs a living human body is for the bloodstream to take it to the brain. Now, once it takes it to the brain, then it becomes its own organ, which is why I was saying that organ is independent of oxygen. The body itself will utilize oxygen, you know, in the air and things like that. And I'm assuming that is for muscle, you know, the muscle tissue.
How can it utilize, though, if it's not breathing? If there's no blood circulating to carry oxygen, is it just through osmosis or?
I'm assuming, yeah, because this new organ that's in, you know, where the brain used to be, it's regenerating. and it's mutating throughout the body. So whatever these mutant cells are, I'm assuming that they're using the oxygen to you know, make the muscles function and things like that.
So maybe the virus, because it's replicating so rapidly, maybe the virus spreads throughout the entire body, not just staying in the brain. And it's that virus that is somehow bringing in the oxygen needed to make the muscle tissue work.
That's correct.
And the autonomic nervous system, which controls heartbeat and breathing, is that non-functional then? Because they don't need to breathe, they don't need to have a heart?
Yeah, it would seem so.
So I wonder what portion of the brain in these zombies is actually functioning.
Well, you
there's
know,
no cognitive thought, is
right?
It, is that
right? It, or if there is some kind of thought, it's usually very animalistic, mostly just for you know for them to survive, which is why they're so. I don't know if you want to call it food, but food based. You know, whatever they go for is fresh flesh and things like that.
So they just basically see food and they want it.
Right.
They don't think about it. It's just somehow they get it as this is a necessity.
Right. Now, and it's also said that the eyes of the zombie are like our eyes, that they're still capable of transmitting visual signals to their, you know, whatever brain. But we don't exactly know how the brain is interpreting the signals. But
I believe I had read somewhere that they see that they don't have the normal vision, that it's kind of a blur to them. But that may be wrong. I just had read that somewhere. You seem to be indicating that they have full vision. And
yeah, well, some theories suggest that, you know, they can see prey at the distance and things like that. There's some experiments that have been done on humans that have attempted to kind of mimic the sight of these zombies, you know, by blurring motion and things like that. And these people that these experiments were done on, they developed like an awkward limp and things like that. So it seems that that's how these zombies are seeing. Like you said, a little bit blurry, but they can still spot prey.
But obviously they don't cognitively think about what they're seeing.
Right.
It's just on a very basic level. Food,
right.
Need it. I'm after it.
Right.
Very scary. Well, again, what would you do if something was after you in the middle of the night and you could not stop it? You could not kill it because it's not alive. We're talking about zombies this evening on Nightcast. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back. I'm Ian Morris.
This is Nightcast.
From the break, I'm Ian Morris. This is Nightcast Zombies are our subject this evening. In studio with me, Stephanie J. from Los Angeles, a zombie expert. Stephanie, let's talk about how do you stop zombies. Now, there are different kinds of zombies, from what I understand, and different ways to stop them. Let's talk about that.
Right. So the first step in anything is to kind of realize when a zombie outbreak is happening before it becomes too widespread. So,
and how do you realize when it's happening?
So some of the steps to realize are kind of just pay attention to the news, to homicides, where the person was decapitated or they were headshots, things like that, kind of out of the norm, to missing persons reports, especially in the wilderness and uninhabited areas. Be careful or pay attention to how they ended up missing, the different photographs that are televised, things like that. Cases of, you know, violently insane subjects where they attacked friends or family without warning, things kind of out of the ordinary like that. Disease-based deaths, where it's kind of undetermined and, you know, it's usually highly suspect of zombie happenings, as well riots and civil disturbances.
Would zombies be more attracted to being in the cities, or would they be more attracted to being out in, like, say, camping areas?
Well, obviously they'd be more attracted in the city because there's more things to feed on.
More of a food source.
Right, but, you can't always control. Well, I don't think you'd want to become a zombie, but you can't control when it happens. I think that's why most of these cases of, you know, missing persons and, you know, campsites, things like that, something must have happened out there. So whether they're roaming and, you know, they finally found a food source, it seems more, you know, apt to happen out there. You know, that's where even, you know, the most common things in, you know, wilderness bites and things like that happen. So
So if there was a zombie virus outbreak, would the zombies leave the city, or would they come to the inner city, and because of the food source being there, which then would create a huge problem because the spread of the zombie virus would be much, much more prevalent?
Right. I think that, you know, if something occurred in the city, they would stay in the city. There's an abundant food source here. As well, you know, like any other animal, any other predator, they're attracted to sound, and, you know, the city's very loud. They can find their prey easy. We're not exactly, you know, the quietest of people. We're in Los Angeles, so.
Well, that brings up a good question. Are there zombie animals?
You know, the cases for these, you know, what they consider the zombie virus, it doesn't cross species. They have done studies, you know, back in World War II with that same virus that they found. They did try to inject it into some animals, but as a human, you know, developed a fever and then died and reanimated. These animals, the infected animals, they died before the virus was able to replicate in the body.
Then in the animal species, that particular virus, I wonder if there is a mutation that there is a zombie animal virus, for example, canines or felines.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure. As well as, you know, they tried with insects as well to see if it could be transmitted through insect bites, but the insect body kind of seemed to reject the virus. So by the time it got to a human bite, it didn't really have any effect.
Now, you said there are two types of zombies. Is that correct?
Right.
So can you tell us about the two types of zombies?
Well, you know, there's the what I like to call the Hollywood zombie. That one is, you know, what you see on TV, Night of the Living Dead, things like that. Basically, your standard flesh-eating undead person. And then, like I had mentioned earlier, there's the voodoo zombie, which isn't really infected by anything. It's more used as, I would consider, like a puppet. So, you know, someone will get an undead body and place a spell on it, bring it back, and that person has complete control of this undead being because they brought it back to life, so they kind of use it as a puppet or a minion, something like that.
What is the best way to stop a zombie?
To date, you know, there's no cure for the infection, but because this virus lives in the brain, it's always attack the head. attack the brain. So whether that's decapitation, cut it off from the source, or, shoot it in the brain, things like that, anything through the head.
I've heard that if you shoot it, the sound of your firearm will attract more zombies.
That is true. So if there is a major outbreak, you want to be mindful of what kind of weapon choices you have.
So what would be the preferable weapon?
To be honest, I mean, as far as household tools, you want to get anything. I mean, realistically, if there was an outbreak, you wouldn't be kind of like a Davy Crockett with all these weapons in your garage. So as far as household tools, anything that keeps you away from them, you don't want close combat. But things like bow and arrows, those would be the most ideal because they're quiet. You know, you don't have to have close combat, and you can reuse those. You can make arrows if you need to.
But shoot them in the head.
Right.
Are there any other things that, I mean, you basically have to be quiet with the way you kill them. Is that what I'm gathering here?
Right. I mean, and that's on the level of a mass outbreak. If there's one zombie, you can shoot it in the head. There's not going to be thousands of others that are going to come running. If it gets to that point, then you really have to be mindful, because if the others hear it, then you're just going to get yourself into a mess, attracting a bunch of other zombies. That goes for cars as well. You know, one of the tips is that you start becoming mobile by foot or bike or things like that that don't make noise, that don't need gasoline, things like that.
Are you supposed to stay in your home? And if so, how do you protect your home? Do you board it, the windows? What are you supposed to do?
It's not recommended to stay inside your home. It's recommended more to get to higher ground because they can't climb. If you do stay inside your home, if you want to protect your fortress, then board up the windows, board up the doors, maybe get to the roof so you can have a good vantage point. Again, you'll need a weapon. If all you have is a gun, then try to buy a silencer. I'm not sure, you know, what you could do. But think, you know, you have a lot of household tools that can be used as weapons, anything that will penetrate the head. So whether it's furniture or knives, kitchen knives or axes, anything.
So don't go into basements. Don't go down low.
Yeah, don't trap yourself.
Go up high.
Right.
And are you supposed to stay in the city? Are you supposed to try to find a way out of the city? Because, well, like in a city, for example, like Los Angeles or New York, it's going to be very difficult to get out of the city because the roadways are going to be simply packed. They're going
right.
to be blocked.
So you should get out of the city. It's recommended to use daylight. Darkness is, you know, we can't see that well in the dark. It's not known if zombies are, you know, they have expert night vision or anything like that, but it allows you at least for greater visibility. And then you just have to plan your escape. You can't go on a whim, but plan where you want to go, scout out, you know, different routes and things like that.
Now, zombies don't just come out at night. They're out in the day. They can attack you in the day as
right,
well, right?
Right.
So it really doesn't matter, but you're better off traveling during the day so you can see what's going on. Because you don't want any surprises. Of course, you don't want zombies popping out at you. And can zombies move quickly or do they move slowly?
You know, from research, I would think that they moved slowly, kind of like the classic, you know, zombies. But there have, not reports, but, you know, in Hollywood, of course, there have been movies, and that leads to theories that, you know, there is a different kind of infection that will allow for their muscle tissue to be completely intact. And they can run at you like a normal human being, which is, you know, a whole other level of zombie, which is even more terrifying.
Now, they have necrosis of the tissue or dying off of the tissue. Are they gray in color? Are their parts falling off like you see on television? Or are the zombies, you know, pretty much intact?
Because there's no blood flow, you know, as if this epidemic did progress, you know, their flesh would be decomposing at a normal rate, so you know, if it lasted for years, let's say, you'd see, you know, what would look like a 2-year-old dead body. So there'd be parts missing or, you know, depending what kind of things they got into. If they're attacking you in your home and they have no sense of, you know, pain and they're walking through glass windows, they're going to have glass in them and things sticking out and things falling off.
Without getting too gross, are they going to have a bad smell?
Yeah, it's actually gonna smell pretty bad, like rotten flesh, basically.
So you would know that they're coming, or you would know that you're in an area where they are, wouldn't you?
You would. You know, like I said, depending on how big this epidemic is, if it's worldwide and it's a mass infection, then the whole world, unfortunately, it's gonna smell like decomposing flesh. You're gonna be one of the rare ones that smells like fresh flesh, which is what they're going to go for.
Well, I wonder if there's... Well, I mean, you spoke to us about that island that was out in the Pacific where practically the entire island was, zombies and stuff. I wonder if when they landed there, if they could tell something was really wrong because of the bad smell.
Right. And, you know, and there's also, you know, you'd have to think about if you had that many zombies on an island and they brought, you know, a fresh body there, they would probably eat the whole body. It's not just going to be a bite, and then they're going to walk away and leave that body to turn into another zombie. They'll probably eat the flesh and the meat off of that whole body, so that person probably wouldn't even have the chance to become a zombie.
Because they're all hungry.
Right.
So now let's get back to, again, let's say that you're going to need to stop a zombie. How do you stop a zombie?
Well, besides headshots, you know, if you found a place to stay, or if you're on the, you know, on the run kind of, and you're foraging for supplies and things like that, since sound does attract them, you can use sound to kind of, before you enter, almost a knock before you enter kind of thing. If you knock on a door, you'll hear the zombies coming. So you'll know, you know, don't go in there, that place is infested. Otherwise, you know, stay away from large groups of zombies. You can't take them all by yourself. So I would just avoid those. Another tip is let them come to you. So
don't attack the zombies.
Right. Don't use all your energy running after a zombie so you can kill it. If it's not coming towards you, just let it come to you. Obviously not too close, but let it come to you and then kill as needed.
Well, Stephanie, we want to thank you for being with us here on Nightcast this evening. Our expert on zombies, Stephanie Jay from Los Angeles, California. Our time is up. Until next time, I'm Ian Morris. Good night, everyone.
This has been Nightcast. Be sure to visit the website at radiob88.com.